You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, one of my favorite guests returns, Julian Rose. Julian is a champion of organic farming and a hands-on president of the International Coalition to Protect the Polish Countryside. He and his partner co-launched a highly successful campaign for a GMO-free Poland while leading a high-profile defense of peasant farmers, which he holds up as the true guardians of biodiversity throughout the world. As a result of their efforts, there are now GMO-free zones established in Poland, leading the way throughout our global community, setting the standards for what's possible. Additionally, Julian is a brilliant author and essayist. His first book is called Changing Course for Life. His new book, In Defense of Life, Essays on a Radical Reworking of Green Wisdom, are both available at Amazon Books and on his website, where you can find his articles, material, research, and thoughts. And that is www.julianrose.info. So let's welcome him back to the show now. Hi, Julian. How are you?
Hello, Lance. I'm very well. Yeah, I'm in good health. Thank you.
Oh, wonderful. Well, what's been happening in your part of the world since we last talked?
You know, it's an amazing phenomena, the world we live in today, Lance, because you say what's happening in your part of the world, and I'm thinking what's happening in your part of the world, and then I'm thinking what's happening in the world?
Right.
Because, you know, we've got into a situation in the world today where the centralization of power has progressed steadily over the last decade or two, and now seems to be accelerating. The impression I get is that the powers that be, the big corporations, in line with government, in line with the trading blocks of the world, are really trying to put the accelerator down and get their job finished. And we activists who are struggling to maintain a level of independent thought, wisdom, and action are bombarded now on all fronts by the pressure to give in to the centralized movement to take possession and control over what's called a democracy. And one of the most important ones and on our side of the world is something which I think you must have heard of. It's the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, which is a new, an extension, actually, of the Codex Alimentarius and the World Trade Organization's trade control interests, in that they want to establish a total free trade movement between the United States and Europe, where all the current barriers, for instance, to genetically modified food, to hormone-free beef, and various other things we have in place in the European end, would be lifted, and there would be basically a complete free-for-all. And this, to my mind, is extremely alarming, because we have it simultaneously with it, an act which is passing, which is being looked at now by the European Parliament and is coming out of the European Commission, which will give individual countries in Europe the right to decline GMO. And you'd say, what? That must be brilliant, you know? Then you read the smaller text, and what does it say? Only with the permission of the corporations that want to introduce it.
Oh, as if you're going to get it.
Exactly.
That's funny.
So that's pretty much, you know, the issue on the sort of broader scale, what we're up against now, which is the rapid as I was saying, the rapid centralization of power on the trading bloc level, the attempt of the big corporations, the governments, the trading blocs, the European Union and all the rest of them to come together and force through issues which are completely against the public interest, 100%. Mm-hmm. And you know from the GMO situation in America, of course, that there's been major attempts in two or three states at least, the most recent one in Oregon, to try and get labeling for GMOs introduced. And every time they try, there's a massive amount of money thrown at the whole thing from the corporate end, and it fails. You know, the vote fails, but only by, what, 1 or 2 percentage points.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's just become like, it's actually open warfare, isn't it?
Yes, very much so. On many levels.
On many levels. In fact, on the food and farming front, not only is it an open warfare, on the broader political level, on the global level, you have an extraordinary situation emerging in the UK, for instance, in association with supermarkets. Now, supermarkets in England have traditionally bought on the global market, and they followed the American example of always buying blemish-free foods. In other words, apples, you know, with no stains on them, tomatoes with no gluches and all the rest of it.
Right.
It's come about that one of the supermarkets has stood up and said, we're going to actually sell blemished apples. And everyone said, oh, wow, imagine that. They're going to sell blemished apples. That's an extraordinary thing. And they said, yes, because the public pressure has been significant enough to make everybody aware that an estimated 15 million tons of food valued at £19 billion is thrown away across the UK in total every year.
Wow.
And now, this is really interesting. 3/4 of all vegetables produced in the UK are never eaten.
Wow.
What do you think of this statistic? 3/4. And why? Because they don't accept any blemished vegetables or fruit. So you get the grower, you know, for instance, an organic grower, and on my farm, we have exactly this problem. He sends his product in when he's ever selling, trying to sell them in the supermarkets, which he's almost not doing anymore. He tries to send them in. He gets 40% rejection because they don't look good enough. That means
and I'd be willing to bet the flavor of those vegetables is far superior to the ones that were raised by the corporations.
And the nutritional value.
Oh, well, absolutely. Absolutely.
And the energy, a whole lot. So,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It is an absolutely extraordinary situation that the world is full of people who are struggling to eat, you know, living on less than a dollar a day. And in our part of the world, in the Western world, in a post-industrial era of wealth and freedom of choice, it's as it's called, in democracies, 3/4 of all the vegetables that produce are chucked. Yeah.
And yet they claim to be so concerned about feeding the population.
Exactly. Exactly. And that is just a very interesting example of the hypocrisy we live in today. And of course, it's vitally important that people recognize this and see the sham for what it really is. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, the more and we are tuning in to the truth element, the more it exposes the untruth element. And then you get to a certain point where you have to say to yourself, how am I reacting to this situation? You know, am I changing my lifestyle in accordance with my knowledge? Because if one is, one obviously should say to oneself, I'm not going to go and support the supermarkets. Because not only are they chucking out all the best food, you know, they're forcing farmers to produce food at very, very low costs and very large volumes and a very poor quality. Mm-hmm. And even if I go into a supermarket to buy organic food, I'm still putting my money into that system. So, you know, these are the sort of questions people have to be asking themselves today if they want to consider themselves to be on the path of truth. And I would even say, you know, spiritually, more spiritually enlightened, because they all go together, those things.
Mm-hmm. And all of these pieces fit together, because you can't drop out the food element, because we still have bodies. And, we're supposedly, some book said that we should consider our bodies like a temple. So if that's the case, why would we be putting irradiated, chemically altered and genetically mutated foods into our bodies if that's the case, and that's part of our spiritual complexion?
Well, that's spot on, Rance. I totally agree. And this is a very important consideration, isn't it, that we do and have made in the past a sort of division, I think, between spiritual aspiration and the realities of the body, if you like. Mm-hmm. We really think, you know, it's possible to go down one course and ignore the other.
Right.
But I think we're coming to the point of realizing that you can't, and that you have to put those two things together. Now, while on the same subject of the corporations and the controlling element, we're talking about supermarkets and food, I wanted to just raise this with your listenership, that to give an example of how the centralization of power is moving on. I read this little snippet the other day. It says, given that a tightly knit network of just 147 of the world's most powerful companies own and control the bulk of the world's productive assets, this is virtually a defense manifesto for the 1%, or perhaps more accurately, the 0.1%. Now, there's a very good point being made there, a defense manifesto for the 1%. Yeah, because if you've only got 147 companies having a controlling influence over the entire world's productive assets, you only then have to sort of welcome them to the club, you know, the Illuminati club, and say, make yourself comfortable, boys, you know, have a nice whiskey, sit down, you know, we're all doing very well, aren't we? You know, keep up the good work. And you see how easy it is to control the population.
Mm-hmm. Well, they've been setting it up and establishing this for hundreds of years, so this is not, it may feel like it has happening overnight, because the technology now is so rapid that they can just basically mow over a civilization with a laser beam or two, and it's gone.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah. No, I think that's absolutely right. And it is extremely important to reflect on the fact that this indeed has been building up for a hugely long time. And we are in a state where time appears to be speeding up, mm-hmm. where the technology is happening faster, where the information is coming through very fast. So, of course, you're completely right. You know, the point is that the concentration of both knowledge from the point of view of ourselves at the receiving end, and the concentration of time and speed and power to get the job finished from their end, are both clashing more and more frequently now. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to go outside and go for a walk somewhere and not meet people who are looking as though they are bewildered.
Right.
And I always come back to the point there that we have to retain our feet on the ground under these circumstances. We have to be very anchored. And I noticed that you were mentioning in an email you sent to me when we were discussing doing this interview that you were just doing your harvest. And I was thinking, yes, you know, doing a harvest is a very real seasonal issue, and it used to be a central platform for almost, you know, the majority of humankind. And that's only about 60 or 70 years ago, that even in the Western world, the great majority of people did a harvest, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we are in a small minority, Lance, but those people that talk to each other and say, I've got to go and do the harvest.
Right. And that's going to become a very big problem in the near future if people don't begin to wake up and realize that the food chain could be totally disrupted at any moment from a number of different causes. And the supermarkets may not be able to function for a variety of reasons. And one of them that I just was researching yesterday was something that Ed Dames came up with. It's a video called Kill Shot, the Kill Shot. And they claim that they've seen in the future, the remote viewers, a blast from our sun, which literally takes out all the satellites and it brings down the grids. So you can imagine what that would do to, commerce and industry and the rest of it, and people would be panicking and going to the stores. Well, what happens after that? You know, where do you get your food? Where do you get your water? These are things that we don't think of usually, because we're always living as if things will always be the same. Well, if you hadn't noticed, they've been getting worse and worse on a regular basis and more frantic and less fulfilling. And at some point, things could just come to a grinding halt.
I totally agree with that sentiment. And in fact, you know, I think these sort of programs like yours are absolutely vital, because where are people going to be reminded of these mm-hmm. facts if it's not from alternative radio, alternative media outlets, etc.? But I don't think they are. And we cannot get access with this type of information onto the mainstream media almost
right.
anywhere in the world now. I mean, you know, we're talking about corporations having controlling influence. I understand that there's 8 corporations that have that entirely own the mainstream media of the world now.
Right.
Again,
right.
There's ever decreasing number of powerful corporations having a controlling influence. And then I see when I do, because I always check out, and you probably do this too, I check out one or two daily media operations operating out of my country, out of England. And I just see what they're talking about. And I see more and more how the trivia is dominating the front page, the more
yes.
the major issues are actually the issue.
Yes.
So, you know, what they're trying to do is keep people in the state of being entertained while the
yep.
most serious issues are played out in the background completely secretly. I mean, all the major stories are not available on the mainstream media, and they are available to a degree on the alternative media. But even there, of course, you know, we still find that we are caught up with a lot of information that is following up other information, which is essentially trivial. So, you know, you
right.
have to be very strong editorial team these days to get the real stuff through and to insist on it and to keep it moving. But your point about the food chain, I think, is the most critical one of all, because actually so few people now have a comprehension or a practical knowledge of what it means to grow food. And as you rightly said, they have the assumption that everything's going to carry on the same.
Mm-hmm.
Well, oddly enough, that falls into two strategies. Everything carrying on the same means slow or medium speed death.
Right.
Because
right.
what is eating? You know, if you want to kill yourself, just carry on in the same way.
Right.
But the speeded up version of that is when the sun's rays cause these massive problematical electronic fault lines, which are quite capable of completely bringing down the control system, since it depends almost entirely on electronics and grids, etc. So that's the fast one. And as you rightly say, that could happen any day.
Mm-hmm.
So what sort of reaction are people having when they hear this information? You know, wouldn't you love to be able to talk to your audience here and now and say, you know, how are you reacting to that?
Mm-hmm. You mean to ask the listeners, say that again. Was that a question to me or to the listeners?
Wouldn't it be great if we could now to the listener and say to them, how are you reacting to this information, you know?
Oh, yes.
How are you going to organize your daily life, bearing in mind that what you're hearing is coming across as being true? You know, and this is the sort of issue that it's like there's this gap in receiving information and then acting on it.
Right.
That is because our system of emotional response has been slowed and dumbed right down.
Mm-hmm.
So we take in a lot of information, we sift through it, and we select the odd bits that we think are the most important. But how many people, out of a percentage of people listening to this program, actually decide there and then, yeah, this is too important to ignore, I'm going to start taking immediate steps to ensure that survival of myself, my family, and my children is secure, at least as best as I can achieve. And that simultaneously, I do my best to prevent the situation getting worse. And how many people listen and think, this is entertaining, this is really cool, there's a lot of really interesting information being put out there, but actually I'm far too busy, you know. My life's on the way it is. I've got to earn the money I've got to earn to keep everybody fed. And, you know, as much as I like hearing all this stuff, I can't see my way to do anything about it. It would be very, very interesting to know what the percentage split would be.
Mm-hmm.
It'd be intriguing.
Yes, it would be. You know, I don't know about you, but I find that most people are most likely to change in the moment that they must change, and they put that off until there's an absolute necessity. Even though they know what's coming down the road, it's usually postponed until a later date. And when something really horrific happens, that's when they say, okay, now I'm going to act. Now I'm going to do it. But that's the worst time to do it, because then you're in a panic and you're coming from fear and you haven't the preparations, and everybody else is now in that mindset. And so everybody is fighting over resources, which they're basically doing now anyway. So the time to the time to be doing these things, setting up reasonable ways to survive and live in a positive way and healthfully, as you do there at the farm, is now.
Is now, yeah, is absolutely now. And, you know, I don't know what the situation is now in Northern California, but I understand in Southern California there's been a very extensive drought. And, you know, when I've read up about this and I've read Dame Whittington on it, I realize that this is highly likely to be a combination of chemtrails and HAARP.
Right.
And that they've managed to maintain this drought now for, well, it's best part of 2 to 3 years. Is that correct?
Yes, yes. So in my estimation, the drought is manufactured and it's designed to keep California dry, which would destroy the food industry. And that's part of, you know, a larger agenda. And you remember in I think it was the 70s, there was manipulation of the weather. And the stock market made a bundle off of cold. I think the weather turned really cold or something. I don't remember which it was, but they, the insiders knew, and they were trading based on what they were told, which was it's going to be very, we're going to make it really cold, and people will die in their homes because they won't have, you know, gas and all that. And we went through some horrible times, and those were manufactured. Just like everything else horrible is manufactured, like wars or, you know, assassinations or, you know, plagues, Ebola. I mean, if you want to look at it, really step back and look at the whole picture, all of these things are created by the same small, relatively small group of powerful people. Call them what you will, the Illuminati, the elite. It doesn't matter. They're the ones that cause all these things, and then they fund both sides. So if you have a war, you supply this side, and you supply the other side, and you make money on both sides. The Bush family made quite a huge fortune off of doing that. IBM and some of the other companies, they're making trillions of dollars on coming up with new ways to kill people. And the defense industry is booming. And so, you know, what motivation do they have to create peace when they're making money hand over fist, you know, selling drones and this and that and the other thing? Who knows what they have, because they don't tell us.
Well, that's so true. And the point there, of course, is also that this control of the weather is has a militaristic element attached to it as well, and makes it possible for people to cause significant disruption, not just droughts in California, but droughts somewhere else in the world, and things considerably worse, volcanic eruptions, various other fissures in areas where the surface is subjected normally anyway to problematical movement. They can increase this and they can make it into a devastating situation which causes a large tsunami. So you're quite right. Between us, I think what we're saying basically is we're reminding people of just how extreme the control mechanism is now. And how, and looking at the weather is very interesting because, you know, it's nice to think that there's still natural weather, but actually I don't think there is, really.
I don't either.
I don't think there is. And what's more, I've also heard that they can make money on betting on the climatic conditions at any point in time in the future. And I've noticed when I'm very interested in weather, I've always looked at the weather forecast. I know them. You see them talking about what some type of weather there's going to be in about 2 months' time. And now they're saying over here, they're saying, oh, the beast of the east is going to move in around Christmas, New Year's. It's going to be extremely cold. Beast of the east. Why is it called that? Coming from Russia. And you know that they're nasty over there. Putin.
Oh, yes, terrible people.
You know? And we've got a whole dose of that in the last 3 or 4 months over here. Believe me, everybody has been subjected to massive propaganda that Russia is about to move in and destroy all of Eastern Europe again, take it back over. Poles have been warned that they must have NATO on their doorstep, if not in the Ukraine, in order to defend themselves against Russia. Putin
is crazy.
Mr. Evil, isn't he, suddenly?
Well, yes, and NATO is a tool of the New World Order, folks.
Entirely.
That's part of the, you know, the whole architecture of their design for a one-world government, and they're working frantically to do that, and if they have to create World War III to do it and explode a few things around here and there, they'll do it. They'll do whatever it takes, and people's deaths mean nothing to them. It's all about achieving the goal and winning. And, you know, that's... So the UN, as far as I'm concerned, should be abolished, and corporations should be reduced to not being human because they're not human. They should not be treated like a human being, and humans should be treated much better.
That's exactly that. I always go back to the Small is Beautiful Fritz Schumacher book written in 1972, which had wonderful insight in it. For instance, he said that a building should never be built taller than the tallest... a building should never be built taller than the tallest tree in the area. So this isn't to keep a balance between man and nature, you know. So you don't feel that you're dominating nature or that nature's dominating you. You have this symbiotic relationship with nature. Now, that symbiotic relationship with nature can only be experienced on an intimate level, right? So when things get very large, it's impossible to have that symbiotic relationship with nature. You're dominating nature to get an end result. And, of course, this is the technique which is being used, you know, that by... the very, very large scale, the sort of humongous large equipment that you see nowadays, everything which is to do with size is has a bullying element in it and makes people feel small. And I read just recently another bizarre phenomena connected with that, really about the control system at work, since we're dealing with all these nasties at this particular point. Come from something called Beyond Black, which is the NSA has Beyond Black methods, apparently, of identifying aliens, as well as most individuals by satellite, due to advanced nanotags that have been ingested from aerosol spraying in the atmosphere by contract airlines. And they're in vaccines, in food, in beverages, and in other means. So nanotagging is the first to be followed in successive steps to systematically take ownership of every mind and hive it into a centralized super quantum interdimensional computer.
Yes, that's happening.
On the high-tech level, they're playing with it on that level.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And, of course, those are realms that are we don't see, and we're not going to hear about it on the mainstream media. And very few of the underground sources are even talking about it, but there are a few. And you can find out about it if you know where to look. And it's very real, and it is going on. And they can't wait to get nanotechnology. Well, there was just there was one little piece that came out the other day that said that I think it was a Swiss group had perfected or were working on perfecting this nano device that was self-replicating, and it swam like a shrimp, and it could go in and do repairs in the eye, ocular repairs. Well, on the surface of it, it sounds wonderful. But what if you those little devices are replicating inside your body and that's not all they do?
Well said.
You know, they can do just about anything that they're programmed to do.
Yeah, I remember The Matrix, you know?
Oh, my God, yes. Well, we're in it.
Through your belly button, that horrific looking.
You're right. We're in it. We're in. Well, oh, and I've even heard about the black goo recently, that there really is a black goo, and it has something to do with some kind of extraterrestrial origin, and that was one of the reasons for the oil spill in Louisiana to cover that up. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on that we can't verify, but we can certainly verify enough to know that things are not right, and the people who are playing the game of domination and control they want to win. They're serious about this, and we are expendable. And we're going to have to fight for our lives pretty soon.
Well said. I'm just going to finish the rest of this little snippet.
Oh yeah.
It says eventually beyond black, and this is an amazing terminology, isn't it? Beyond black, and that
comes
up. Their methods are planned to be used to genetically alter the brains and nervous systems of the masses, and later transform them into a new species that resembles an android more than a human with free will. This plan is criminally insane, yes, of course it is, but has already been activated, and its early phases with absolutely no oversight or any checks and balances. An example of SSG power gone mad. Now, you know, that is the absolute extreme, and that takes us back into the concept, you know, of the sort of supercomputer man taking over from the feeling emotional human. And that was something I was quite preoccupied with writing about recently. So you see at the most extreme end, they are, as you rightly say, determined to introduce an entirely alien form of human being who has no sympathetic, empathizing, heartfelt emotions left at all, and only has a sort of entirely, you really actually can't find the right words to describe it because language hasn't really developed around this horror story, thank God. So we have to play around to try and find some sort of language to describe this totally neutered, I call it, neutered state of existence, you know. No sexuality, nothing left. And the ultimate horror of all this, of course, is that most people will say, oh, well, that's too far, you know. We can't believe in that and some of the things you were saying earlier on. Yes, maybe, but that's just a few people playing around, and it's not going to be anything really serious, and it could never happen. It's all too far out. And the reality is, unfortunately, that you know these things have been and are being worked on and developed. And when you say we're going to have to fight for our lives, I think we really are going to have to fight for our lives, but I think the way we're going to have to do it is to reconnect ourselves with our deep spiritual emotional level. And that is the one, that is the one element that they can't deal with.
Yes.
You know?
Yes,
and that
absolutely right.
A vibrational level which goes much further and actually dissolves all this stuff if it dares to try and face up to it. So our bravery and our fight of the future isn't the same exactly sort of fight we used to have in the past, although the passion which goes into it will probably be very similar. And, and it's saying that the light, the inner light, the defense of the planet, or as my book is called, In Defense of Life Itself, is going to really force us to hone our spiritual, deep, heartfelt, and gut-felt, I would even say solar plexus-felt, love of life to be so strong that this is what becomes the key issue in bringing all this stuff down.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, beautifully said. And of course, a willingness to look and an open mind to see what's really going on here in the Matrix.
Yeah, that's right.
But yes, this is the Beyond Black. I'm going to do some research on that because that's something that needs to be brought to light as well. And there are not many people who will do that.
Not many people will do that, no. But, you know, there again, Alance, another interesting factor is the whistleblowers. The people at work, I mean, you know, for instance, the people who've been working in underground laboratory situations developing intergalactic travel.
Right.
Usually with military interests, of course.
For instance,
trips to and fro to Mars, which have probably been deals done with extraterrestrials that are doing energy swaps for materials from the Earth and the technological information in exchange for whatever you know we can offer them. This sort of information is coming out a little bit more because there are now a few people who have been working in these situations who are speaking out. But again, it sounds so bizarre that the temptation obviously is to immediately say, that's too far out, you know? This guy's probably mad.
Well, you know, the good news is that there are enough people with good reputations, like Andrew Basiago, who's a lawyer, who has was in a time travel program in the when he was a child, and it was called Project Pegasus, I believe, and it was funded by the Vatican, run through DARPA, the defense industry, and they were at that time doing time travel, and they were also sending kids to the Mars base, which is there. And if people don't believe there's a Mars base already there, that we have Laura Eisenhower, who's the great-granddaughter of Ike Eisenhower, was invited to go there by the elite. They told her that, you know, the things are going to be falling apart here, and we're going to be, you know, you're either going to have to move off the planet or you're going to be probably die on the planet. And so they're working furiously to get their ducks in a row, and they can probably come and go as they please. So she was asked if she wanted to go there, and she said no. And she talks about it all the time, and there are other people, Alfred Lambert Weber and a few others that talk about the Mars base, you know, that's not the only thing that's going on. The moons are all bases. Every one of the moons that our moon, the Jupiter's moons, those are bases. They're manufactured and they're placed there. And though we don't know exactly what's inside them, we know it's weaponized and that it's run by advanced technologies and that the artificial intelligence is interfacing with it. And it's also interfacing with a lot of the corporations here on our planet and integrating advanced artificial intelligence that is going to be something to see when it actually makes the switch and lets us know. It's going to happen, and most people will be taken by surprise, but it's coming, and it's working on it, and it's already given birth. So, you know, those things are going on right under our noses.
right under our noses. And it reminds me of, and I sent, I think, this to you quite recently, is Carlos Castaneda, who, writing in the 1960s, really, or 50s even, really, saying that, you know, every individual human being has one mind which is actually theirs and another mind which isn't. He says we're harboring the predator's mind all the time.
Yes.
You know, the predator is an alien force, and it's not got our interests at heart. On the contrary,
right.
It's actually wants us as food, you know, as nourishment for it. So as long as it can keep us in a state of confusion and fear, and all the rest of it, it will live on it in a vampiric spirit. And
absolutely.
I find, you know, these writings have come round again in a way which is very important. That there's so much insightful awareness in these shamanic people, which, and, you know, they've had it for a very long time, don't forget. Talking mm-hmm. about some of the seers of places like Mexico, South America, and even, of course, in the East as well, who have seen and know about the existence of these other mind which is controlling us.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk mm-hmm. about these, all these issues to do with like HAARP, chemtrails, space travel, military indoctrinations, shape-shifting, all in the interests of power, we see that the old shamanic tribal people actually knew about this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and they not only did they know about it, it seems that they could see these beings.
Yeah.
I talked about it as some, actually, you said it when you look at the horizon on a dark evening and you let your eyes go out of focus,
mm-hmm.
he says you will see shadowy figures either side of the corner of your eyes. He said and those are basically the elements that are bringing and playing with the dark forces, and they're all around us all the time. And he said then we can also see the filaments of energy that connect up people and places in the universe itself.
Mm-hmm.
They're like golden light, he describes it as, and they're shimmering. And the shamanic people could see these, and they could see the connections they were making, and they could see the difference between those and what they called a coat. It's like an illuminated egg, is how he described it, which apparently is well known from mythology. It rests close to the right-hand shoulder of all of us, and it's a protective spiritual element. It's like our guardian angel, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, they could see these beings. It was like they were like a coat that was luminous. And it's an amazing thought, isn't it, to think that out of a time when there was virtually no information, no high technology, no advanced awareness amongst a significant group of people about the state of play, that there were people who nevertheless could see what was going on, could warn people that, you know, your mind is not your mind, it's someone else's mind, and it's a mind that has not got your interests at heart. If you're going to discover what your mind is, you're going to have to dig deep, and you have to be very disciplined, and you're going to have to really drop almost everything you think is true and learn all over again. And, you know, those are the shamanic teachings, and they are going to be, again, extremely valuable, I think.
Oh, absolutely. They're making an enormous comeback. And I had a couple of guests on who have become shamanic teachers, you know, gone to the source of the training and have learned these techniques and can see them and can help people heal as well. But what you're talking about reminds me also, not only Castaneda, that I think is a superb source of information, but the Gnostic Gospels. And John Lamb Lash wrote a book called Not in His Image, which it kind of elucidates the Archon problem, which is what we were just talking about, that these are mind parasites. They don't have feelings, and they feed off of us. They can't create of their own, but they can manipulate us to create for them. We are the creators. And so we get manipulated all over the place if we're not present and conscious and aware, because there's nothing but propaganda being beamed through the television, through the radio, through the airwaves, through cell phones. If you could see it, it would look like a maze of nets and filaments that will connect with you and basically milk you, just like the Matrix. So it's going on everywhere.
Yeah, this is really what I think is very particular to the time we're living in, that all this information is coming together now. It is unprecedented, I think, that so much knowledge of the inside workings, the outside workings, and the fact that what we think of as bad people who are doing the wrong thing and who are maybe stupid or just very arrogant are actually being manipulated 100% and allowing themselves to be manipulated 100% by these outer universal forces which we didn't know existed at all. Other than that, when we read the Bible and when we were brought up in our Protestant or Catholic churches, we heard of something called the devil. And that's our only point of reference, isn't it?
Right. Right, that's it, yes. And now we know there are many different kinds. There are quite a few different sources of difficulty that are definitely trying to trip us up.
And
there's a huge alien presence, both positive and negative. I just had a guest on the show who talked about her lifelong experience of having talked and met with some of these beings, and she has a favorable reply about them, including the reptilians and the greys and the mantids. But then we know that the government works with some of the negative ETs, and that there are robotics, there are clones. I mean, there's so many different things that are have so many different hands in the pot, that I think what's going to happen is that there's going to be kind of a fight between those who would like to retain control over humanity, and at some point they're going to start duking it out at the higher levels, and that's when we'll begin to see the faces behind the mask.
That's interesting. Yes, I can sort of imagine that could easily take place. And you know, we're being tested, aren't we, Lance? Really, this is a sort of initiation process for mankind, is it not?
Yeah, absolutely.
This is the harder, the more dark. And I'm talking about the darker than dark, whatever it's called. Sorry, beyond black. If it's going to go beyond black, we've got to be beyond white, and we've got to get even more strategically pulled back into who we really are, into essence, I think.
Absolutely.
So this appears to be a huge process of initiation we're going through now, and in many respects, you'd have to say that it's got a positive ring to it, because if you take the old stories, the myths of like King Arthur, and you have these tests which were largely to do with the male, actually, at that time, the male discovering his inner maleness and his femaleness, you know, these myths like the legend of the Holy Grail, etc. They were all basically based on initiations, whole series of initiations. So now what's happening is these myths have sort of been brought up into the modern time, and to the greater world and to the universe. Now they're on a universal level. And we see that they weren't just myths at all. We see that they were based on very real information, which was up in the form of mythology so that we could absorb it in the spirit of a quest.
Yeah.
And I love this old medieval quest concept. And I think this is the most important thing, the element of mystery, of quest, and of you use the word fight. And I think we shouldn't shy away from the word fight, because it is a fight. And we have to draw upon that part of ourselves which has been buried for too long, which has been rendered far too sugary. Right. Far too well pampered, I think. So that we hardly know what it actually is, that voice inside us, which could rise up and become an amazingly positive force for good. And in that sense, Mark, I'm going to surprise you by reading something from your own book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. This is Zany Mystic, Tales of Zany Mystic. And towards the end of it, you write a very, very profound little piece, and I'm going to read it to you. It said, "The Creator wished to know more about itself when it decided to make this creation and sent all of us creator sparks into the chaos to explore. We make sense of the world, each in our own way. And so the Creator learns of its nature. Rarely is it contemplated that God is evolving, expanding, and growing, and we are part of this cosmic consciousness embraced in infinite love."
Wow. Did I write that? Well, thank you for sharing that. My goodness, I'm that was very nice.
Well, I think it was wonderful, because what you said, and it's particularly remarkable, and I've always felt the same thing, you said, you know, "And so the Creator learns of its nature." In other words, Creator learns of its nature through us.
Yes, yes.
We have been given this extraordinary task on the planet of actually working through on the third dimensional level, you know, on the realistic plane, the godly element, so that the Creator, who had a brilliant imagination and thought process, could actually see some of the results of all this. Mm-hmm. And I think this is absolutely correct, and that not only will the Creator want to see the results, the Creator wants to evolve. You know, the Creator wants to get further, not just be stuck with and trying to sort of push us along and say, "Come on, you people, wake up to who you are, to who I am." But the Creator itself, himself, herself, itself, actually also wants to expand and keep moving. And it only can do so if we get going and recognize our own spiritual essence and develop it, move it, embrace it, dance it, love it. And that will be what will also throw light on all this beyond black element, and will dissolve it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you totally on that one. And what Creator in his right mind, if you can say that the Creator has a mind, maybe it's all mind, maybe we're in the mind of the Creator, would not create a happy ending. I mean, why would you be the Creator and create you know, something like disaster and gloom and have horrible things that take over when it's your story? There's hope that gradually everything works out, and I think we're at a very positive time right now that our DNA could easily be reactivated, and the 97% that they claim we don't use could connect us all, just like the animals are connected already, and we'll have telepathic abilities, and we'll be able to see through the lies and manipulations and distortions that are presently veiled.
Indeed, that's correct. Every day I get more and more, every other day I probably have to say, I get more and more synchronistic communications from people. You know, and it's already happening, and I'm thinking about someone, and all of a sudden an email arrives from that person. It happened today, and it happens so often. It's now beginning to be not so crazy, you know?
Yes, and there's a point at which you have so many of those in a short period of time that you absolutely cannot deny that they are not accidental. You can no longer say, "Well, that was an accident," or "that was a fluke." There's a point at which you know at your deepest core self that those were designed and intentional and created for you, and you are the Creator.
That's it.
Co-creator.
This is a wonderful thing to experience, and I hope, you know, listeners to your program take this on board and recognize that I'm sure almost everybody out there today has had at least one or two experiences like this, and I think quite a lot of people have had quite a lot of them, which shows you, you know, that the, what we'd call the Jungian collective unconscious, he used to call it. The collective unconscious is where we're all connected up with one another. We're all our family. And we're a family that is struggling to realize itself. We're up against all sorts of horrors on all levels. We've got some people in this family who are utterly destitute, and other members of this family who are absolutely gorged with wealth. So it's hard to, it's pretty hard to stretch the imagination to put them all together. But nevertheless, the fact is we are all one family, and we are connected to a collective unconscious. Mm-hmm. And that collective unconscious is the rising potentiality of the godly in us. That is the element which is the truly positive element of the time we're living in. I think people will talk about a change of era, the end of one era, the beginning of another era, the end of the Piscean era, the beginning of the age of Aquarius, if you like. And, you know, on this huge time scale of the cosmos and the planetary level, no doubt this is playing out also simultaneously. And we are.
And what would happen if the collective unconscious suddenly became conscious? It would an entirely different world.
Entirely different. Well, that's very exciting, isn't it?
Well, Julian, I think we're just about at the end of our hour. Yes, and I don't want to run over these.
Right.
So it's been. I always love talking to you. You are just one of the most interesting, fascinating people in the world to me. And before we sign off, would you please let the listeners know where they can find your work and get your books, which I highly recommend, and that they are a must-read.
Okay, John, certainly can do that. So the book, the particular book, which is the one to read at the moment, is called In Defense of Life, Essays on a Radical Reworking of Green Wisdom. And you can find that on the Amazon.com. Especially if you're overseas, that's probably the easiest way to get it. Also available in major bookshops. And you can buy it straight from the author, from myself, by going on to www.julianrose.info. I can send you a copy. And the price will be adjusted according to the cost of sending the book, so I can't really tell you exactly what it would be. But I do hope you will. And the book is very up to date, and it's very passionate. And I hope that we will have a connection with our readership, because I always like a little bit of correspondence when people buy a book from me directly. Lovely to hear from people to say what they feel about it and their insights. So there we are, Lance. I think that's pretty much covered it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you again, Julian, for coming back, and I look forward to our next fireside chat.
Indeed. I hope keep the fires burning there.
All right. You too. All right. Good night.
Good night.